Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Now, I got to asking myself recently, folks, following the recent Paralympics, how did the athletes feel about coming home? What were their thoughts on the work of the Canadian Paralympic Committee? What were some of the high points of being at the Games? To that end, first interview today is with wheelchair curling athlete Mark Eidson. Supposed dated interview, folks, done on the day Mr. Eidson returned to London, Ontario. You'll find out what the Paralympic Committee did to honor him and the other athletes upon their return home. So tell me a little bit about some of the latest happenings with the Paralympic Committee.
With the Paralympic which?
The Paralympic Committee.
Oh, well, just this morning, the CIBC and the Paralympic Committee hosted a welcome home reception for me here in London, and I believe 30 other receptions right across Canada for all the Paralympic athletes. And it's nice that that CIBC and the Canadian Paralympic Committee are keeping the Paralympic movement going after the Paralympics are over. Keep the people's interest in disabled sports.
So, can you tell me a little bit about your experience with the games themselves?
Well, Sochi Paralympic Games were everything I, imagined a Paralympic event to be like. There was lots of people there. The venues were big and spectacular, and spending time with athletes from both Canada and from across the world was such a unique experience. The accommodations were very accessible for us. Sochi really left no stone unturned, and the Russian people should be proud of they did a really, really nice job on making it very accommodating for all the athletes.
So, what was your particular area of sport?
I was a wheelchair curler.
So, what led you to get into the game itself?
I started wheelchair curling in 2010. I did play a little bit able-bodied before my accident. I played in public school and then again in my early 20s. But after my accident, I played wheelchair rugby. And I was really enjoying wheelchair rugby, but I thought, if I were going to play a sport at the next level, it wasn't going to be wheelchair rugby, because I was like a turtle amongst rabbits out there. And I was inspired by something I watched during the Olympics in Vancouver in 2010 on John Montgomery, who inspired me to do something to represent my country at the highest level. So, I found curling and through some friends, and I'm glad I did, because No, it was such an amazing experience representing Canada and Russia.
So, can you tell me a little bit about the training you underwent to become a professional curler?
Well, our schedule this Paralympic year was a really busy schedule. We were training on our own at the gym and at the curling club, just about every day. And then with the team, because our team is spread out right across Canada, we would meet usually in Vancouver for a training camp. And so we had 16 trips before we left for Russia. So it was a lot of traveling, a lot of flying this year, and a lot of time spent together with the team in preparation.
So what sorts of challenges are typically faced by an athlete with a disability, your experience?
We're lucky. We're supported very well by Canada, and Canadian athletes are well looked after. And I think the biggest difficulty for me was being away from my family, my wife and my kids, for such a long period of time, and all the weekends of training. My kids are young; they're 4 and we're 5 and 8, and it's difficult to be away from them. But luckily, with technology now, we've got FaceTime and Skype. I'm able to talk to them and see them. Otherwise, we're really well looked after and we're really supported. So, the other challenges are, I guess minuscule.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the Paralympics, was there any one success moment that stood out for you?
I think for me, my teammate, Sonia Gaudette, she's the most decorated wheelchair curler in the world. She had the honor of carrying the flag this year at the as we went into the opening ceremonies. And I have a lot of respect for Sonia, because she's now won 3 golds in wheelchair curling and in all 3 Paralympics that curling has been played. So I'm inspired by Sonia, and I've learned a lot from her, and just her career as an athlete has stuck out for me.
So, if you could send any one message about disability sport to the community, what might you say?
I think it might be difficult, but people could look at disabled athletes as just people. You could see past the chair and see past the amputations and devices that people use to get around, and just see the athlete competing in their sport and trying to do their best to represent their country. We're all equal, and we're just trying to do our best to bring home the gold.
So, do you see yourself participating in the next Paralympics?
I'm going to do my best to represent Canada and in Korea. I'm going to continue training and working hard, and hopefully I can keep my spot on the team.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure.
During Mark's interview, he touched on what I consider one of the most critical points in all of disability life: the effect that sport can have on a person with a disability. How freeing it can be, just the opportunity to be out there, doing what you love to do, being part of a team, no less. He is correct in so much as there needs to be greater recognition. Disability sporting events go on all the time. It's just a question of recognition, I think. So much as The world is very much familiar with events like the Special Olympics, the Paralympics. These are events that are on a large scale and draw in a very large crowd. However, it's not to say that they're the only events in disability sport. By no means. Groups like the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association run sporting events on a weekly basis for these individuals. And when they're out there, they're just thinking about the things they love to do, being a part of just the game. They're not thinking about what could hold them back, because sport is just a very freeing experience. It's meant to be enjoyed. Plus, gives them the opportunity just to stand alongside others of similar ability ranges and say, I recognize that your gifts in this world are comparable to mine, at least in so much as sport. And together, maybe we can do something remarkable. Maybe we can go out there, win this game. There's a saying among people with disabilities, let me win, but if I cannot, let me be brave in the attempt. I love this philosophy. It's an ideal that I think more athletes should aspire to, just giving it your best, not necessarily thinking all about being in the limelight or the glory, but just putting your heart and soul into it, which from the sounds of it, is what Mr. Ideson did during his time at the Paralympic Games. Now, if you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, and the number 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Dugout Sports Lounge at 300 Bled Avenue in Windsor is the home of downtown's favorite sports pub. Featuring 12 HD TVs with multiple feeds, your game is sure to be on. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m., including half-price appetizers and 450 pints. Live acoustic music Wednesday through Saturday night, great drink specials and ice-cold beer. There's nowhere else you'd rather be. Dugout Sports Lounge.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handicapable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Mark Ideson, a Paralympic athlete who shared his insights about being overseas as part of the recent Paralympic Games. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Jennifer Kumiyama, State Coordinator for California for the Miss Wheelchair America pageant. So tell me a little bit about the Miss Wheelchair America pageant.
Well, Miss Wheelchair America, the mission of Miss Wheelchair America is to provide an opportunity of achievement for women who happen to be wheelchair users, and they will in turn successfully educate and advocate for more than 54 million Americans living with disabilities. Unlike a traditional beauty pageant, Miss Wheelchair is not a contest to select the most attractive individual. It is instead a competition based on advocacy, achievement, communication, presentation, and to select the most accomplished and articulate spokeswoman for persons with disability.
So, can you tell me about the upcoming pageant, how it might differ from previous years?
This will be Miss Wheelchair America's 38th pageant, which is a huge deal. It is to select the title holder for Miss Wheelchair America 2015. And 2015 is the 25th anniversary of the signing of the Americans with Disabilities Act. It is the first time it will be held in California. And we here in California are very, very proud. There will be 29 women from 29 other states in our nation, and they will all spend a week here, August 4th through August 10th, 2014, in Long Beach, California, competing for Miss Wheelchair America. During that week, they will go through workshops to hone their leadership skills. Certain workshops that will also be centered around adaptive physical fitness. And it's going to be a great week. There's a lot of mostly women, and they're also going to be very, very busy. So we're just really happy to have everybody in California from the Culture America for the first time in 38 years.
So you mentioned part of the title is based on advocacy work. Can you give me some examples of this?
Well, I run the Miss Wheelchair California Foundation, which is a part of Miss Wheelchair America. And my title holders, as well as others, are responsible for maybe going to the state capitol and speaking on behalf of the disability community when it comes to budget cuts from the state that pertain to people with disabilities. These budget cuts affect our community so much, and I feel like every year it happens more and more and more. So our women go and speak to the state about these cuts. We also spend a lot of time speaking to able-bodied groups, not just people with disabilities, in order to kind of break that stereotype of people with disabilities, as well as educate them on the needs of people with disabilities in society. I'm fortunate enough to live in a state, in a city that is really, really great and very inclusive to people living with disabilities. And accessibility is very prominent. However, it can always be improved. And I feel like it will always need work unless more people with disabilities or without disabilities, you know, come to speak up about it. Advocacy also includes speaking to children. Teaching children about inclusion and about disability and things of that nature.
So, in your time working with the Pageant Foundation, what sorts of challenges have you seen?
With the pageant particularly, or just in life in general?
A little of both.
Well, working with the pageant, we host our pageant at hotels, and every year Miss Wheelchair America is hosted in a different state. And now that I'm finally hosting a national pageant in my state, the biggest challenge is providing transportation for so many women. There's 29 women in wheelchairs, also the women that run the board. Most of them are in wheelchairs, actually all of them are in wheelchairs. And, you know, some of our caregivers who also take care of these women who come to compete are also in wheelchairs. It's difficult to find transportation for that many people from one place to another. It's also a little bit difficult to find housing. You know, in these hotels, there's only a certain amount of ADA-compliant hotel rooms in one hotel, and we have 29-plus women in wheelchairs that need, you know, ADA-accessible hotel rooms. That's a challenge, too. Finding shower chairs for all of these women is definitely providing to be a challenge as well. But, you know, part of being a title holder in the past, myself, I was Miss Wheelchair California in 2010 and the first runner-up for Miss Wheelchair America in 2011. It has taught me a great deal about finding ways around that and making it work. And pulling the community together to serve these women who deserve to be, you know, celebrated and welcomed. That's been a big challenge. In life in general, I would think it applies to the same thing. You know, I travel quite a bit. Travel is a little difficult for people with disabilities, particularly people in wheelchairs, because you have to get out of your chair and trust somebody else to take your chair from, you know, the plane to where it's supposed to be stowed to travel. And, you know, a lot of times it comes back broken. And one time it did come back broken to the point where it completely ruined my vacation. It's just things like that, making people aware of how important your wheelchair is to you. Like your legs, you know, how far would a person who's able to walk get if their legs were broken? So these are just things that we go through every day, particularly to the pageant.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time working with the pageant, Is there any one success story that stood out for you?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question just a little bit louder?
In your time with the pageant, is there any one success that stood out for you?
Is there anybody that stood out in the pageant? Yes. Miss Wheelchair America 2013, her name is Mariah Kilborn. She just left the room. I was able to watch her compete in Rhode Island and be crowned. First of all, all these women are phenomenal. And to have to be a judge at this event, I definitely would never, I don't think I could ever do that. Mariah was very, very professional and very happy and very excited about being an advocate for people with disabilities and sharing her platform. And at the same time, while she was really professional and such a great businesswoman, she also spoke to children so well. And the way that she translated inclusion, regardless of the age she was translating to, was absolutely beautiful. And I think she definitely stands out the most to me. As well as our current Miss Wheelchair America, title of Miss Wheelchair America 2014, Jennifer Lynn Adams from Washington. She is a beautiful woman who's a dancer, and she travels so much to spread her message of inclusion and the power of words. And I think those two particularly stand out to me the most.
So, if you could send any one message about the pageant itself, what might you say?
I feel that Miss Wheelchair America is the epitome of having, or the epitome of what it is to be a proactive advocate and strong woman with a disability in the community. This program provides a lot of opportunities for title holders, as well as people who come in contact with the program. I'm very proud to be a part of it. I encourage people to support, you know, if they live in America, or even if they don't, to support the states that are involved. And you can find the states that are involved at MissWheelchairAmerica.org. And the title holders are wonderful, and the state coordinators and the board of directors really hold the program together and keep it as strong as it's been for the last 38 years.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
I really do support the work of Miss Wheelchair America in so much as, in a way, it's a different kind of beauty contest. If you think about it, equality and acceptance are a beautiful thing, and something we all seek for in this world. And the fact that the requirement is partially based on advocacy, going out there, spreading a message, actually living up to the ideals, not just saying, I would do this to change the world, but having the chance to say, I have done this to take a chance on making the world a better place. But I have gone out there, given it my all, told the truth about the world as I see it, sharing my ideas, sharing my opinions, but also saying to the community, I am a strong, capable person. I have just as much potential to succeed as anyone else in society. I have the right to say my thoughts on any given subject. And this, my dear friends, is a very public forum. It's something the world can get behind. So it puts a human face not only on the beauty of disability life, the beauty of equality, of advocacy. And teaching young kids about disability life, I've always maintained it's especially important. During a child's formative years, they can be around a person with a disability, come to learn that this is just a person, and maybe, just maybe, they'll grow up with an understanding. They should keep an open mind in any given situation. They should just enter into meeting somebody new, say, this is somebody I would like to take a moment to get to know. Sure, there are going to be things that make them special, but there are things in all of us that do. It's no better, no worse than any other type of person. Just living their life in a slightly different way. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink, HandyLink, the number 4, at gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. One thing Jennifer touched on during the interview, I find rather disturbing, to be honest. That there are only X amount of accessible rooms already prepared ahead of time. Truth is, it's bad business practice for anyone, especially someone in the public service industry, such as a hotel or a restaurant, not to have inclusive or accessible spaces or facilities. It's just cutting off their own business opportunities. Individuals with disabilities, just like anyone else in society, and so much as they want to be able to stay in a hotel, they want to be able to travel, they want to be able to eat out, should the occasion call for it. But it's a question of, will these businesses have the appropriate facilities? It's not a question of, I wouldn't go in there, it's that I can't. However, for businesses to plan ahead, newer buildings are often made with accessibility in mind, at least to some degree. You see things such as wheelchair ramps, wheelchair washrooms, but more can always be done. You can put Braille on signs, you can have a backup system for individuals who have a hearing loss, just to make sure they can have the full range of access, the full range of opportunities. And in the case of an emergency, it's a matter of being prepared. It's a matter of saying ahead of time, I know this can happen, and I want to make sure that everybody, whether they have a disability or not, is safe and well taken care of. But on a day-to-day basis, it comes down to, will this person with a disability be able to fully appreciate the business or service I have to offer? If something's fully accessible for a person with a disability, they're like anyone else in society in saying, if this business does right by me, I'll be more likely to come and patronize them again. If they do not, then I won't be as likely to make use of their service again. That's not only business practice, disability practice, it's common sense. But when a business or a service shows respect and understanding regarding disability life, it's something that can be entered into the equation. Logistically speaking, for disability events that have to travel, they're going to want to plan ahead for facilities that they know have the right stuff, that they can count on to make every possible accommodation for people with disabilities. It's not unreasonable to ask. As a large minority in this world, individuals with disabilities, like anybody else in the world, are simply asking for equality. Not more, not less, just a chance. A chance to express the things that matter to them. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.